BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
Hello, welcome to the Rugby Union Daily. It is Calcutta Cup week, and we're joined by a special guest for a special take on a very special fixture. Gregor Townsend, the Scotland boss, is with us. And Gregor, I make it you've been involved in 20 Calcutta Cups over the course of more than 30 years. Does that sound about right? I think we've got sort of 10 as a player, 10 as a coach, whether head coach or... It's obviously a fixture that means a lot to you.
It does, and it meant too much to me when I first started playing.
Meant too much?
Yeah, because it wasn't just playing for Scotland in the Calcutta Cup. It was the memories of being a supporter in 1990 and the years around 1990.
Were you there in 1990?
Yes, and...
Grand Slam, Murrayfield.
1984, yeah. I was there, but it was more around that 90 game. That game meant so much to Scottish rugby supporters, and I was, 16, 17-year-old at the time, so very much focused in on what the national team were doing. And it's got iconic moments for us in our history, where the walkout, Finlay Calder taking the tap penalty, Tony Stanger's try.
Might have been a TMO.
No, he definitely put it down. And so that game meant a lot. And I was playing for Scottish schools at the time. And I used to get so pumped up playing against England, the old hitting yourself in the face and all that. And I used to take that into the games when I played. And also when I first started coaching, I got too emotional around those games. So it probably didn't help me, as you can probably know that I didn't have a great win-loss record against England as a player and assistant coach. But the last few years, the players have done really well in this fixture.
Yeah, let's go. We'll skirt across the defeats, but we're going to just pick out a few important moments for you, and I think therefore for Scottish rugby, because a lot of your involvement has been intertwined with some great moments in Scottish rugby, particularly lately as the head coach. But let's go back to the start. Let's go back to 1879 at Retnow, joking, Raeburn Place in 1879. Let's go back to 1993 and your debut. Your memories of it, off the bench, Twickenham against an England side who had gone, they didn't win the slam that year, but had gone back-to-back slams in 91-92.
Yep.
World Cup 91, that semi-final at Murrayfield, 1990 and all that. So it was a game that was really sort of a pretty heated game, I imagine, back in 93.
Yeah, and Scotland had a really good team that year. Over the next 3 or 4 years, we were competing for Five Nations Grand Slams. 95, 96 were both to decide the Five Nations. Scotland got a lot of players into the Lions Tour in 93, but England let loose in the second half. So it wasn't a great experience. Obviously, winning your first cup is meant to be this brilliant moment, but it's different when it's off the bench. Like in those days, you only came off the bench if there was an injury. So I'd been on the bench that season, no minutes at all, and it was the last game of the season, thinking, no one's going to come off in a Calcutta Cup game. Like, people used to stay on with real bad injuries because it just wasn't the done thing to come off. But then Craig Chalmers went down injured, and there was a cue that the medics would give the coaches if an injury was serious. So if it wasn't serious, we'd put a white towel out of the medical bag. But if it was serious, it would be a blue towel.
Right.
And as subs, you knew this as well. So when Craig went down injured, I went, oh, I'm not going to warm up. He'll be fine. And then I saw the blue towel come down and went, oh.
Right, action stations, yeah.
Better get down there. And I remember it took a while because it was a serious, broke his arm, serious injury. It took a while before he came off. So I was stretching at the sideline, just looking up at the high stands at Twickenham back in the day. And the blood started to just drain out of me.
Really?
Yeah, and for 10 minutes when I got on, I was hopeless. Martin Bayfield ran through me. That's how bad I was. Martin Bayfield missed a tackle with Martin Bayfield. Had a high tackle of Will Carling. And I thought, oh, I'm not ready for Test rugby. But then the 40 or 50 minutes after that, I loved it. And I couldn't wait to get the opportunity again, which would happen the following season. So, yeah, Scotland had a really good team that year. And then 94, we lost with the last kick of the game.
Yeah,
at Murrayfield.
15-14 at Murrayfield. Yeah,
and that was a game I'd missed a couple of drop goals, but then got one with a minute left for us to go ahead. But then off the kickoff, they won a penalty and kicked the goal. It was a really disappointing game for us, obviously, as Scots. Gavin Hastings was interviewed after the game and he was in tears. And 95 and 96, both were Grand Slam games for us, and we lost them both. So weren't too many good memories through that
stretch.
But you
weren't far off during the 90s, yeah. But you had to wait, didn't you, till 2000 for your first Calcutta Cup win as a player.
The only Calcutta Cup win as a player.
But that you know, Matt Dawson, our friend, you know, he doesn't want to reminisce too much about that game. But for you guys, that was no doubt a special afternoon.
It was, and it was a weird one. So 2000 wasn't a great season for us. We'd won the championship in 99 and playing some great rugby, ending up, I think we got 5 tries in Paris in our last weekend. And then the following year, we lost to Italy, welcomed them into the Six Nations with a defeat.
Very charitable, yeah.
Yeah, and then we lost all the next 3 games. So we went into the final game knowing it was England as a really disappointing season.
And they were going for the slam, weren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we won. And now, we played well that day, but the weather had a big factor, and we just thrived in the sleet and the rain better than England did. But it was interesting, the reaction after losing 4 out of 5 games and beating England compared to the year before when we won 4 out of 5 and won the championship. It wasn't too different for our supporters.
And what does that say?
Yeah, well, I reckon that some supporters were, well, this was better this year because you lost to England last year, even though we won the championship.
Trophy or no trophy.
Look, it says what that game means to our supporters.
Especially after a long wait for a win as it was.
Yes,
yeah, from
yes,
1990 yeah. to 2000.
And unexpected too. I think when you win against the odds, it means even more. And you know the rivalry and the banter between Scots and English. There's a lot of Scots moved down to England over the years and worked there. So for them to have a week at work to say to their colleagues, we've won, nothing means more for Scots than winning that game.
Because it was an England team that was starting to really assert themselves at that point. You know, 99... would have won the slam were it not for Wembley and Scott Gibbs. And then, you know what happened in going up to 03. So it was a big scalp, albeit in conditions where I think you were 13, weren't you?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. So you were a 10 and a 13, so probably a lot of boot to ball, a lot of scrapping and just hanging in there, I imagine.
Yeah, and we were absolutely frozen. I remember at the end of the game, we were so cold, me and the back three, I think both centres and the back three, just went straight in the showers with all our kit on to try and warm up. It was so cold. Like, the guys in the back three never touched the ball in that second half.
So that was 2000, 1913, and your win.
My only win.
As a Scotland player. And then the wins in 06 and 08. And then after 08, a bit of a fallow period. Now, you were involved as an assistant from 9 to 12, if I've got my dates right.
Yeah.
What was it about that period? Did you not have the players? Did you not have the structures? Because particularly after, say, 08, around the sort of early 2010s, we'll get on to what happened in 18 and on from that. But can you look back now with the Calcutta Cup having a very different complexion as we speak today compared to what it did have back then and sort of pinpoint why?
Yeah, look, there's probably a number of reasons. But I think even in the 06 and 08, I think a lot of the games became unambitious rugby, and probably from our point of view more than England's, and more our where we were, the state of the game for about 10 years. Now, you could say that's down to the players, maybe down to the ambition of how we wanted to play. We didn't produce great rugby through that period. It wasn't as if we were scoring lots of tries but losing. No, the games were ground out by kicking points. So really, the players and the mindset changed mid 2000s. I think the guys like Stuart Hogg first coming onto the scene, and others like Finn Russell, and a more ambitious brand of rugby.
You didn't have those personnel back then. Not to disrespect those guys.
Maybe it's hard to say, but we had some quality players. But maybe our strengths were built around second row and back row.
We had
lots of good second rows. Nathan Hines, Richie Gray, these guys went on Lions tours. Always produced good back row and scrum half. So maybe we didn't have the outside backs as we do now. And you have to match your game plan to your strengths. Mm-hmm. So with the players that we've had in the squad in the last 10 years, you definitely want to play a game that brings them onto the ball more. And I do believe fundamentally that's a game we have to play. We have to play a game of speed and movement, because the alternative, you're going to be overmatched at some point when you play teams with big packs, huge packs. But the game of speed and movement, yeah, you might come up against another team that can play that game, but that's really going to bring out your best strength, so it gives you your best shot to beat them.
So from 08 to 18, a fallow period, but 18 was, you know, one of the great days at Murrayfield, and there's so many different things to mention. The year before had been a hammering at Twickenham, hadn't it? 61-21. This was an England team that won the Slam in 16, had won the title in 17, had only lost once in 2 years under Eddie Jones, came up to Murrayfield as the big favourite. You won 25-13, but not just the win, the style as well, whether it was that Hail Mary pass from Finn to put Hugh Jones away, Hugh Jones's try from 50. The rugby you played, as well as the result, must be so pleasing at the time and to look back on now.
Yeah, well, that's one of the best days I've been involved in, whether even as a supporter or a player or a coach. It was just one of those great days when things clicked, when the team won through playing rugby and also defending really well in the second half when England had most of the possession. It was a very well-deserved victory, and it was one that inspired and engaged our supporters. Like, we didn't grind it out. We didn't win by 2 points. No, we won by playing excellent rugby and continuing that in a physical side in the second half. So, yeah, it was brilliant to see.
Yeah, because you had, I think I remember John Barkley, Hamish Watson, all over the breakdown, you know, yes. Properly did England there. But when Finn threw that pass, you know, I can't remember the England player, maybe Jonathan Joseph or someone, fingertips to intercept, and Hugh Jones away, recycle, Maitland scores in the left corner. Was that the plan going in to stretching, or was that just Finn being Finn, seeing something was on and going for it?
I remember it being a combination of both. I think we knew the way England were defending, they were coming up with a line speed, and there's always that evaluation of risk with, look, do we want to play to that space out there? Yes, but ultimately it's the player's decision-making and skill that have to execute that. So the pass, the understanding of Hugh's angle to hold his feet, brilliant to see. And it's judged in a microsecond, but done with skill, knowing that that's can't be intercepted. Even though you think it's fingertips, it's like, no, there's just no way physically, because I'm going to put an arc on this pass, and where the defender's body language is, he won't be able to recover. So, yeah, it was an iconic moment. And then the fact we scored a try off the back of it on the other side of the field was great.
Yeah, because your forwards also, Fraser Brown maybe bundled over.
Stuart McAnally.
So there was a real team try. You know, yeah. One of those, I remember being there and always will remember it. So we've got wins in, you know, 90, 2000, 6, 8, 18. All even numbers. You know, there's a theme here with it all, them all being at Murrayfield. Twickenham, no win since 83. You go to Twickenham in 2019, a place you'd conceded. You weren't the head coach at the time. You came in the summer of 2017, but you'd remember England running amok that day in 17. You go to England in 19, to Twickenham, and you're 31-0 down within as many minutes. And all of the ghosts of Twickenham past would have been, no doubt, you know, coming out in your mind. What do you remember about that first half in particular?
Yeah, look, I remember a lot about it because I think I was too emotional with the team, and it had been the first time I'd been back at Twickenham in a capacity as head coach, and I certainly got too pumped up about the fixture, but also the...
About 83 and all that and the history.
Yeah, and more my experiences of playing the game and how I would always get too emotional as a player. I didn't enjoy Twickenham.
Anything in particular?
Well, the defeats.
Yeah, I think
being there, the atmosphere can be. I don't know. It's a different atmosphere than you would get at Cardiff, at Dublin, at Murrayfield, and I just linked it with I've not played well, or we've not had wins there, and the fixture for me. So I remember probably being too emotional with the players before the game, and we were loose early on, and it did remind me the game 2 years before when I'd watched it on TV. Like, this is could end up the similar scoreline. Like, if you're 30 points down after half an hour, and we were not playing accurate enough rugby, but also we were caught in an England team that was just thriving off the crowd, and there was ways where you can take that away, make it harder for them. And that's what we set out to do in the second half. I had no real hope or thought that we'd win the game. We just said, let's leave with some respect and win the second half. But to do that, we've got to make sure that we're not putting ourselves under huge pressure, and feeding England the opportunity to score off turnovers or loose kicks. Now, what ended up happening was amazing, because we did play a bit more structure at the beginning of the second half, but then we scored, and then we scored straight off a kickoff. And you could see the confidence growing in our team, and the reverse happening with England. They started to go, hang on, we've been scoring 4 or 5 tries, now we're conceding tries. And it got to the 60th minute. I think we were, maybe we were.
You went 38-31 up.
Yeah, but I think we got to 31 all.
Sam Johnson went through.
When we got to 31 all, there were still 20 minutes to go, which was amazing. And then we thought, like, this is ours. And the game kind of settled down. It was, okay, it's back to 0-0. And we had a lot of confidence with guys coming off the bench who were fresh. Then when Sam scored, you think, this is it. Now, in the end, it's one of the best ever games in history. And because both teams can claim it too. Like, it's a draw. It's going to be really remembered as just a unique game that'll never happen again. But there was obviously a twinge of disappointment from our perspective to be ahead going into the last couple of minutes and not win. But from where we were, it was an amazing comeback.
Yeah, it's my favourite game ever commented on, so I want to dwell on this one a bit. But before half-time, Stuart McInally charged down, kicked ahead, scored, which at the time didn't feel much. But is it one of those tries that can be just an energy turner, or did you get into the change room and go, we're still 31-7 down here?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because at Twickenham, we're in the stand as coaches, so it's a bit of a walk to go to the change room. And it's a good thing, because it can take away your emotion, just spending a bit of time thinking before you speak to the players. And our defence coach, Matt Taylor, we obviously scored the try of the charge, and then we had a really good defensive set before half time. He went, that's really good, that was a great defensive set. And I looked at him thinking, we've conceded 5 tries and you're being positive. But it did register in my mind. I thought, okay, we've got someone to hold on to there, like a charge down, the defensive set. And once we got into the change room, I remember Danny Wilson, forwards coach, talking to the players around perception versus reality. The players thought that the line-out was under a lot more pressure. The forwards went, no, it's not the case. Like, I think the reality had been augmented with the atmosphere and everything. Well, we can do better there. And we did talk about winning that second half and just going out there and focusing on how we do that, rather than the bigger picture. The game's lost. It's let's not distract ourselves with that. So, yeah, and look how the guys played in the second half, Finn in particular. Like, it was Scotland at their best for about 20 minutes. I think for about 20 minutes, and that was amazing to see every opportunity that we were creating was leading as a try.
Yeah, you mentioned Finn. What was said at half time? Because he came out afterwards and said that there was a sort of tactical discussion. Did you have to change the way you played? Did Finn lead that?
Yeah, we had a good discussion, and I like that in a player, like to go and say no, maybe we should do this, because what his frustrations were that we weren't. When we were running it from deep and losing the ball, they were scoring. But when we were kicking it, they were scoring off counter-attack. I said, yeah, we just have to kick better and we have to organise our kicks better. That's going to get our defence in the game. That was the issue for me. It wasn't that whether we should run or whether we should kick. We should be doing the things more accurately. And we did set out to do that. But then the spark of us full of confidence and taking on the defence more increased as we played that second half.
It's brilliant. Darcy Graham tries, Finn's intercept. He did that no-looker to put Sam Johnson through. And then England to score with the last play of the game to kind of break Scottish hearts, because you were that close to winning at Twickenham for the first time in ages. So You must have left Twickenham that day bittersweet. What an incredible comeback. But was that the opportunity to win at Twickenham gone, only to come back 2 years later and 4 years later and win both times? Different games, one COVID, no fans, one a raucous Twickenham. Does one stick in the mind, stand out, mean a bit more to you than the other? Because it's impressive to win once at Twickenham, given the long losing streak, but to do it the last two times is pretty awesome.
It's hard to say which one sticks out more. I think from a rugby performance, 21, because the conditions weren't great. And we mixed our attacking game, our kicking game, our defence really well. I thought our set piece was outstanding that day against a very good English pack. And I felt we should have been further ahead. Like we were in their 22 on their line on a few occasions, but it still went down to the last minute, and Hamish Watson won a turnover. So that was a really outstanding performance, and to break that record of not winning there for a while meant a lot to us. It also meant a lot to our nation, our people as well, because we're all stuck at home in COVID. And we got sent all these videos of people celebrating at home, guys ripping their Scotland jerseys off and going crazy. And that was something that inspired them. And we talked about that during the week, about how we can lift our nation. What can we do? Obviously, win this game. It's going to give everybody a huge lift. So it means a lot. But last year meant so much too. From a personal point of view, to be there when there was crowds and your team win. I thought it was going to be my last Six Nations too, so I was probably more emotional after that game than others that I've coached in. But also the way we won, like Duan's second try, like to come back from behind, to run it from your 22, to involve, I think, 10 or 12 of your players in the actual movement of the ball, and for that finish was amazing. So that would be up there with 2018 in terms of the rugby, attacking rugby we produced. 2018. You know better than me.
No, it's just, if you look at it, it's 2018, you got the magic, you know, Hugh Jones break. Because Hugh Jones tried the Maitland try from the Hugh Jones break. 19, you've got the Finn Masterclass. The second half, you know, and then 23, you had the two to Van der Merwe tries. It's great moments, as well as these great wins. And you mentioned 21, everyone being stuck at home. We actually had Andy Nicol commentating with us from home, so he was about 5 or 6 seconds delayed on it all, which so we had, I think, Matt Dawson with us in the ground, but he couldn't get down from Scotland. Okay. So yeah, even our commentators were doing it from home, and yeah, you really got a sense of how much it meant in 21, but then to kind of back it up in 23.
And to obviously, in the context of the championship, just to start with a win builds huge momentum. The way we played as well gives you a lot of confidence going into the rest of the games of the tournament.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. And just finally, this weekend, Murrayfield, you won in 2022. England got the job done in 2020. And that challenge of how you have dominated the Calcutta Cup in recent years, to win three of the last five, the draw as well, to be holding it since, you know, 2021, extra pressure being at home and almost being the favourites, which has happened a bit recently, but over the course of the fixture in the last 30 years as we've spanned, it's quite a rarity still.
Yeah, look, both coaches all love to say they're the underdogs and other teams are favourites. And yeah, I think the fixture, and maybe we're biased, but I think the fixture has really opened up in the last few years. There have been some really good games. And we would say that because we've won most of them. But I think they've been excellent adverts for our game and for the Calcutta Cup, which wasn't always the case. Mm-hmm. They'd be maybe more defensive orientated or doer battles, whereas now you're seeing teams having a real go at each other. It's always a special atmosphere, Calcutta Cup, and I do think it's changed too. I think it's become a positive atmosphere. I think in the past it would be, I don't know, anti-English, I don't want to use that term, but it wouldn't have been a great atmosphere for the game to take place. But now I see a lot more joy as a proper game. And I hope the English supporters feel that way when they come to Murrayfield. It's a great place to play, and I'm sure we'll get a good game this weekend.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you enjoyed this trip down memory lane.
Jeff. Well, you know more about it than me. I'm very impressed with your stats knowledge there.
That's Wikipedia that I've got open. Great to see you, Greg. We'll see you at Murrayfield on the weekend.
Thanks
a lot. Five Lives Rugby Union Daily. Okay, really hope you enjoyed that special episode of the Rugby Union Daily with Gregor Townsend, all about the Calcutta Cup and what a match it promises to be on Saturday between Scotland and England at Murrayfield. We're up and running with the Rugby Union Daily, match week 3 of the Six Nations. Loads more to come, as you would expect. Tuesday morning, Nations Pod time with Gro and Tom. Wednesday morning, we're inside the England camp. Thursday morning, we're taking a look at that rivalry that's really bubbled over the last couple of decades between Ireland and Wales ahead of their Dublin showdown. The teams are then out. All the reaction to that on Friday morning. And then we're on the ground in Edinburgh. We are on the ground in Dublin. We've got you covered every single step of the way. And you will not miss a thing with us. But that's it for Monday's Daily. And we'll see you tomorrow.
The drama.
They're having to be separated. They've both been shown the red card.
The entertainment.
And it's goal!
The superstars.
Foden! Oh, yes!
What a goal.
Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. I'm Mark Chapman, and every week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
They have this dynamism and this quality that they can play anywhere. They need to prove themselves in scoring more and more and more goals.
I think if they don't win the title this year, the season is a failure in the league.
Planet Premier League. Listen on BBC Sounds.